This is the unfiltered truth about entrepreneurship. Raw, no BS, no sugarcoating. Welcome to Entrepreneur Intel. I'm your host, Wes Matthews. Each episode, we'll learn from experienced founders and uncover the top 5% learnings that led to their success in all things personal, family, and business. This show is sponsored by Stealth Consulting, delivering clear marketing strategies, ROI, and no surprises. I'm super excited for today's guest. He is an entrepreneur who helps businesses harness the power of their vibe to produce seismic results. Through his business advising, he has helped companies achieve 6x growth, and I'm sure more, and we're going to learn all about that. He is a sales expert, having led teams that drive over $100 million in annual revenue. He is the founder and principal at Affect Advisors. Welcome, Bill Green.
Thanks, Wes. Appreciate you being having me here.
So happy to have you here. But I got to start. I ask everybody the same question. I got to ask you the question. So you've got a really unique story from an entrepreneur perspective. So you've been an entrepreneur for 9 years.
Yeah.
What's the most important lesson you've learned thus far as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the most important thing I've learned over the last 9 years is that you are truly living a free life. Freedom comes from thriving authentically. Being able to really be who you are, showing up in your own unique ability and delivering value that makes you happy so that you can help make other people happy. So living authentically is the biggest lesson I've learned.
So I'm really excited to unpack your story and all your nuggets because you flipped to the dark side. You're an entrepreneur now. But going back, like you kind of went the, I don't know if I call it the 9-to-5 route, or you you went to an enterprise, an organization, and talk a little bit about that. Like you were at that company. How long were you at your first company for?
Yeah, 23 years I spent in the corporate healthcare space and medical sales. And I always had an entrepreneurial bug, but just, based on my upbringing and kind of going to college. And at the time, our generation, we, go to college, learn some things, get a great job, and kind of just 30 years in a gold watch was sort of the mindset coming out of the 90s, into the 90s. But ultimately realized in that process that there were a lot of things I'd like to do that I was able to do for a lot of years. And then some things that maybe I started to realize I needed to figure out my own path if I was going to be able to do them authentically and have that freedom that I wanted.
So at what point, so you 22 years, at what point do you start to think, did you just get so much experience in your company? Because I want to talk a little bit about what Affect Advisors does, because I'm assuming it's a little bit different than healthcare.
Yeah.
But at what point in that, in your corporate career, where you're like, I think I want to go down the entrepreneurial path.
It's funny. You make the question sound a lot more complicated than it was for me. I can almost remember the day, maybe not the exact day, but I remember the moment. I was about 43 years old. So it was about 11 years ago. And the core element of my job was to spend time out in the field with my sales representatives and seeing customers and coaching them on selling and listening and understanding how to deliver value and things like that. And it was that moment about 11 years ago when I was coaching a rep who was having trouble connecting with the customer and doing her job in a way that we both know she was capable of. And it dawned on me at that moment, it really had nothing to do with healthcare, had nothing to do with sales. It was really just all about understanding what she really wanted for herself. And I found in the moment, I pulled aside, I went and had a cup of coffee. And I said, what's going on? What do you want out of this job? And she started explaining to me that her dog had died earlier that week and her husband were having a hard time dealing with it. There were a whole lot of personal issues that had entered the fray that were affecting her job performance. And at that moment, we had a nice conversation. A few tears were shed, I'll be honest, on both sides. And I realized at that moment that it wasn't about sales or healthcare or anything like that. It was about people. And recognizing that this person who had the capability and the potential to be very good at her job, in fact, had demonstrated that capacity previously, wasn't actually doing so at the moment because she wasn't able to be herself for whatever reason. And upon further inspection on that moment, it just became a situation where she felt she was trying to please someone other than herself. And I drove away from that day with that rep in the field and thought to myself, I'm doing the wrong thing. I'm not in the right place in my life. And I had a lot of obligations financially at the time and to my family that didn't give me the opportunity to kind of just jump in head first to the entrepreneurial world. But at 43, I'd made up my mind to say, when I turn 50, I want to be in a position where I can do what I did in that moment coach that person to connect to what she really wanted and find her true potential to be who she really is and perform at a level that she's capable of for businesses all over the place. And so that's what I did, is ultimately kind of took the next 7 years to invest in myself and learn and grow. And when I turned 50, that's when I started working out what I'm doing now full time.
So what is Affect Advisors at the core?
Yeah.
Like segueing right from that story to what is it?
Yeah. So there's the two words, affect. I specifically chose that word instead of effect because I wanted it to be about ultimately what influence we can have on others, how we show up, both as a verb, influencing and changing affect, and also as a noun. What is your affect? How do you show up? How do you present yourself? So my choice in words were very deliberate. And then advisors, I really look at it while I'm a one-man show, a solopreneur, if you will. There are a lot of people I count on in my network to help my clients get to where they need to go. Sometimes I can help them based on my skills and experience. Other times I need to plug in to people who have experience in areas that I don't. So the advisors, plural, is the people I trust and refer to my clients. So Affect Advisors is about helping people show up as their authentic selves and change and influence the outcome that they're getting into a bigger future that they may not be getting at the moment. And then relying on myself and others to help them get there. So team of people to kind of make the present better by making the future bigger.
Well, I love your path. One, because I'm about to be 43. And I think I kind of turned my back on corporate at like 24, 25. I don't remember.
Yeah.
But it's always so interesting to me, like people's, like something happens and they're like, I'm going this way. Or, you know, you learn things. Like I learned in the corporate world, like this is what I don't want to do. It's got to be something different.
Right.
So as an entrepreneur, I think it's important to think about like, how do you jump in? Right. I have this vision in my mind of like two little kids with jump rope. Right. And like, when do you jump into the jump rope so you don't get hit and blow up the game?
Right.
So if I'm assuming correctly, like you were here at the corporate organization, you had this aha moment. And do you sort of start this off as like a side hustle, or like you kind of ease into it as you're doing that? Because I think that's interesting for a lot of people, right? And I want to get your take on that. Like what went well, what didn't go well? Would you do that again, or would you go all in, you know?
Yeah. I think the short answer is I would go all in if I could financially. And I know many entrepreneurs don't because they're not in that position to, you know, sleep in their car and eat ramen noodles or something like that. Some have. And I know people, in fact, some of my very good friends literally have led that path to where they are today very successfully. I was in a position where I had to create a bit of a runway. So it was about 43 to probably, so 11 years ago was what, 2013, let's say.
13, yeah.
So it was about 3 years later that I actually had my first client and my first work. But in the 3 years before that, I really made a commitment to learn and read a lot of books and take on opportunities within my corporate job to start demonstrating and exploring the skills that I knew I would be needing in my business. And it was sort of serendipitous for me that a soccer dad, I'd coached his kid in a couple of different sports, pulled me aside on the sidelines and said, hey, I'd like to talk to you about helping me with my new business. He was starting a construction firm with one of his clients and wanted some help. And so I thought we were going to get together and have a drink or something and give him a few tips. And he said, no, I would pay you in, you know, I need some help. And I thought, well, I don't know what I could help you with and whether it's worth paying me for it, but I'm open. And so we ended up trying out, you know, 6 months or so of me doing various things that he didn't feel he was able to do on his own. And so that was sort of the first client experience in 2016 for me as a side gig that I was doing in my free time and really learning some of the things that I had taken from my corporate career and leading teams and running businesses, making decisions and things like that to impart upon someone who maybe had technical experience, but not the people, leadership, and organizational experience that I had had. So that was my first opportunity to kind of, you know, really try it out and see how it worked. And I worked with that company for 7 years. We just wrapped up our work at the beginning of 2022. Really, there wasn't much more that I could do that could help them. So we still connect and catch up from time to time. But it was a side gig from like 2016 through 2019 for me. But I think the short story is that investing in myself and learning that I needed to hone in my skills that I was going to take with me from my corporate experience, specific skills that I knew I would be needing when I was going to be engaging with clients and providing value one-on-one with them is where I spent my time in the, you know, 6 years or so in between.
What does that look like? And what did that look like? So you get the soccer dad, right? Like, yeah. Hey, I need help. And you're probably like, oh my gosh, how do I price my time? And, you know, as an entrepreneur, like I struggle sometimes with head trash, or what's easy for us could be really hard for others. And you're trying to like be fair and pray. Like, how did you start that? How did you come about that? Were you reading a lot of entrepreneurial books? Were you seeking out mentors or other entrepreneurs, or how did you sort of kick that off?
That's a good question. I think a little bit of all of that, but I think what it really came down to is what I talk about a lot with my clients, and kind of a central focus of my own core values is to just be real. That's my first core value in my business, is to be real. And being real in this instance, I literally sat down with this business owner and said, what are some of the things that you feel you need help with? And we just wrote them down. We got to about 16 or 18 different things. Everything from setting a vision to creating his LinkedIn profile to press releases, because I'm a journalism major that spent his first 4 years in public relations. And there were some things on the list that weren't necessarily in my wheelhouse, you know, like financial management and things like that. I know people who do that well. I'm not one of them. I mean, I can manage my finances, but I'm not somebody that I would pay to do it. And so we kind of ended up settling on probably eight or so things that would be of value. And then the way the conversation went was, I want to realize that I'm going to be doing this very part-time, and starting with him and his partner kind of were the focus of the client work. And so we kind of just said, well, what would this be worth to you? This is the be real part. And he kind of said, hey, I couldn't hire an assistant or an executive assistant or a coordinator to do the things that are on this list. I would probably pay them this much money to do that. And I said, that sounds reasonable. Let's start there and see where it goes. And so it turned out that, you know, at that time in 2016, the amount of time that I was able to put into those eight or so areas and the amount of actual hours that I spent, let's say on a weekly or monthly basis, really amounted to an investment for this business owner of about an executive assistant. And I think the impact that I was able to deliver for that company in that first year and beyond, you know, was commensurate with what they were paying. And ultimately, as we added more value and more services, they added more money to the contract.
Yeah, I want to hit on that real quick, because it's interesting, because some clients, in my experience, they look at things, they associate it to like an hourly rate, and they calculate things in their head.
Right.
I'm a big outcome guy, right?
Yes.
Like, what's it worth to you? Like, I love that statement, because it challenges, because at some point you're probably, I'm assuming you're thinking back and you're like, at some point you're really getting it, you're driving a lot of value, then you're like, man, I'm just getting administrative assistant pay.
Yeah.
Like, I could charge a lot more. So like, talk about like that over the 7 years, like how does that start and then just evolve into more, right? I mean, if he kept you around for 7 years, like you're really helping them, adding a lot of value, but like, how did that start? And then kind of where did it go?
That's a good question, Wes. And I think you intimated it earlier. Then as you start to kind of get out and do the work and you start to see, ooh, that's a lot more work than I thought it was. And maybe I'm not getting paid enough for that. Or, oh, you know, that's probably not as enough. That's not as deep as I need to go. Not enough. I probably shouldn't be charging that much. You start to kind of benchmark. And that's where you start reading books, listening to podcasts, talking to other people who do similar kind of things. And you level up a little bit. And the good news is, in this particular instance, I don't think I was too far off, especially given the fact that I hadn't really done it before. You got to start somewhere, right? You're not starting out at kind of premium compensation if you're kind of starting out. But I think in the end, it just did become a matter of, and frankly, I love the way you said it. I think somebody might have given me this advice, but avoid the idea of hourly notion. Like, what is the value you provide? And is there a relative benchmark? Let's just randomly say it's somewhere between $5,000 and $7,000, or $10,000 and $15,000, whatever the case may be. It's not, well, I charge $200 an hour or $500 an hour, because then you're getting way, way too much into time for money. And frankly, that's kind of what I was trying to get away from, getting out of the W-2 paycheck world, because you technically get paid for your time. I want to be paid for their value.
So at what point, so you take on your first client, right? Mm-hmm. So now you have like two things you got to deal with, right? And maybe there's like this sense of like, hey, like how can you devote your time to both? But the one question I want to ask, I think it's really important for people that are in a W-2 job, or like 2024, like you hear all this side hustle, everybody's got a gig, and you know, we're on Zoom meetings and all these different things. And when do you let go of the vine of the corporate safety, right? I know you said like you needed a runway.
Yeah.
But like at what point in your mind you're like, is it just your base needs are taken care of and you're like ready to go all in? Or is it more of like a, hey, I really believe in myself now. People are paying me. I'm adding value. Yeah. Like, what was that trigger for you to let go of that vine?
You know, it's kind of both simultaneously, but I want to go back to what you said a minute ago. I think at some point for me, it's the recognition when you talk about merging, like doing the side hustle with the W-2 gig, I had to get good in my own head in that instance with who am I when I show up? It's not who do I work for? What logo's on my business card? What's my title? What's my business and what do I call myself? I'm still Bill Green, a guy that has these skills and interests and desires and wishes and wants, no matter what label I'm wearing. So it really was a hard but fulfilling kind of journey to come correct with after 20 at the time. It was probably a little less than 20 years, but after associating myself with my company and what it did and stood for so long, you had to go through a little bit of a come correct with, I'm still me. And so when I started getting really good at saying, hey, when I'm doing my day job, for which I'm receiving a paycheck every 2 weeks, how am I showing up? What value am I delivering? What are the things I'm doing? What are the skills I'm learning? What are the skills I'm demonstrating? Where are the gaps and how am I looking to close them? And over the ensuing years, both before and after I retired from corporate, I think that's where that idea of being really comfortable at being who you are and driving authenticity and freedom being wrapped around being able to show up as yourself became a real central component of everything that I do. Because if you're trying to be something to someone else, that's what I learned from that rep I talked about at the beginning of our conversation. Yeah. You're really abandoning the things that are really happening to you and for you in your life and not embracing those. So it's a long way of saying that, you know, I got pretty comfortable quickly because I made a commitment to do it, to say that whether I was doing my day job or whether I was working with a client on a Saturday morning in front of a whiteboard, I was the same guy. I was just wearing a different hat in that moment.
So I see the dad thing in your background. Like how did the corporate experience of your life and then you're an entrepreneur, like what are the big differences as a family guy or just your overall well-being or life? Like, is there a big difference that you can really see from these two experiences?
Well, the biggest difference, Wes, is I became an entrepreneur. My kids were driving and in college or almost ready to go to college. So there's a lot more self-sufficiency. I don't know, looking back on my experience over the last 9 years or so, what it would have been like to try and tackle that where you are in your life, for example. When my kids were 6 and 8 and 11 and 12 and I coached their soccer and their baseball and all that kind of stuff. So the nice thing about a more predictable income and a predictable lifestyle and not having the pressure of running the business was it gave me the freedom and flexibility to be really, really present with my family. Not that it wouldn't be possible as an entrepreneur, but I think what I've learned in the last 9 years is trying to start something new from scratch, like I did in 2016 when my kids were 6 and 8 and 12, would have been a lot more difficult than it was when they were 16 and 18. So I think that's the biggest difference, especially as a family person, is that I can take a few more risks now. I can be, I can travel and kind of be disconnected a little bit more without so much fear of a loss from a family perspective.
I had a good conversation with a good buddy of mine, I think like last week, and he's like, being an entrepreneur is scary, right? Like it's just, there's so much risk and there's all these things. And I'm like, I think having a W-2 job is scarier. And he's like, how so? I'm like, they can fire you at any second. And like, he never thought about that. And I think I kind of freaked him out, but I'm like, to me, that's way scarier. Like having, you know, I'm an entrepreneur. You're an entrepreneur. I mean, sometimes we have bad days, our thoughts and our vision changes and you know, so it's just kind of an interesting perspective. It's really cool that you've seen both sides of the coin there. But like what, so now, right, you got Bill Green, you do all these great things, you have all these, a wide range of skill sets, but like, does Effect niche down specifically? Like you seem very passionate about people and certain things. Like what is Effect really, like what's the heart and the core?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because it's something that I've worked really hard on in the last year, taking into account my real life experiences with clients and the different frameworks that I've used and tools that I've curated and learned and become certified in. And I think particularly over the last 3 to 6 months, but certainly over the last year, I really feel like I've gotten dialed into this idea of company vibe. And the reason why I kind of chose that was in my experience coaching in the corporate world, the strategy came from headquarters, you know, hundreds of miles away from where I was working with my team in the field. But I had human beings, boots on the ground in the field. And the connection between the strategy at headquarters and what was happening to produce the revenue was me. And so what I found was when people were connected and we were really compassionate and showing an understanding of what's happening to them as humans, we could ask for more, be more clear, get more buy-in, get more alignment around execution on strategy than if we just said, hey, this is what we're going to do. Let's go. Pausing for a moment, saying, what's going on? Is there something going on in your life I need to know that's making this happen the way it is instead of the way we'd like it to? And so that is the vibe. And I often define it, Wes, as that almost imperceptible space between strategy and culture. We hear those words a lot in business, don't we? Strategic yeah. planning, or what's your strategy, or culture and toxic culture and, you know, workplace drama, or my culture is great or my culture sucks. But that space in between is very, very fluid and very wide. And that's where I like to spend my time. So when I think about effect advisors, it's about how do we engage, change, and influence that vibe in a way that works for us by connecting strategy and culture instead of something that just happens around us to cause us to drift or get stuck. Or sometimes it's an accelerator with wind at our back. So that's been my experience, is to really niche into that space of the feeling and the emotion, if you will, that yeah. creates friction and conflict for business owners.
So how is like a visionary entrepreneurial run company, like obviously before, I mean, they could call you and solve this problem, start working with you, but obviously there's entrepreneurs that probably have gone through some trauma or some major issues to ultimately find you, right? Yeah. And have you help.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at myself as a visionary in my last company and our culture. Yeah. And, you know, you hear culture, and I kind of would like roll my eyes and be yeah. like, oh, you want stupid things on the wall that right. say integrity. I'm like, if you're an a-hole, I'm not going to hire you. If you're a good person, I'm going to hire you. And like, that's our culture, right?
Yeah, right.
I never thought about that. Then all of a sudden I woke up and we had like 50 employees, and I'm like, oh man, like this is kind of bigger than me. Or like, I got to like, I bought into EOS and I implemented EOS and the VTO, getting people around one vision. But I'm really interested on your perspective around like, what is an entrepreneurial run company need to start thinking about? And like, what's important? I mean, so many things to pick apart there, but DEI wasn't a word that existed
yeah.
a handful of years ago, and inclusion and all these things are happening.
Right.
It's like overwhelming. And right. sometimes as a visionary or entrepreneur, like it's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I understand where you're coming from. And I think it is, I was an EOS implementer. I think, you know, that we've talked about it in the past. Yeah. And I learned a lot from that experience about the importance of, I guess you could say, system or framework or structure, accountability. That is so important. So I talk about clarity and connection being two key catalysts to harness the power of a company vibe and turn it into seismic business results. That's sort of my story, you know, my elevator pitch, I guess. And what that looks like, I think, from a visionary entrepreneur is, I have a plan. Even if I'm the only one that can clearly articulate it, I have a plan and I love it. It's a good one. Maybe one or more people also see it that way, mm-hmm. but they'll say things like, people just aren't aligned. I can't get my team to follow it. I can't get people to do what they say they're going to do. These are real words I often hear. Something feels off. I mean, 9 out of 10 times, one of those comments are what I hear. It's not, I don't have a great org chart or my meeting. So I do hear this from time to time. My meetings suck. I hear that one a fair amount. Yeah. Our meetings are soul sucking. But there are different cues that I pick up in the conversation that my ear is in tune to that maybe other people's are not. And I don't tend to get too involved with process or, you know, standard operating procedures or financial health and P&L and all those kinds of things. There are people far more qualified than me to do that stuff. But I really feel like when I hear people say, I have a vision, I know where I want to take this organization, I just feel like I'm always getting in the weeds. I've got my elbows in the mud, up to my elbows in the mud, or people aren't singing to the same sheet of music. All of those kinds of phrases tell yeah. me there's a vibe issue. Something is off. And almost always it's, is it clear what you want? And are you connecting to the people you're asking to do it? If the answer is no, I can help.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, is it usually the visionary or the entrepreneur or founder? They're asking the question, but they're really causing, they're causing the issue.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, sometimes the way it comes up, and I'm sure you've heard the phrase before, are you the fireman or the arsonist? But I think the real challenge comes down to not suffocating the energy and the creativity of the entrepreneur and the visionary, but helping to build, the phrase I like to use is self, I don't mean this literally, but conceptually, a self-managed team of leaders and ultimately a self-managed organization. What does it sound like? You know, people would act like an owner. I had one client of mine say, you know what? The intern is acting like an owner now. Yeah, we were working together for about 6 months, even down to he didn't mean this literally, but the intern right. He was referring to is somebody that was showing up every day and offering her insights and contributing in a way as if she was an owner of the company. So if you could create that vibe in the organization, and to your point earlier, it goes beyond culture. It's a feeling of engagement. And I use the term vibe, Wes, to mean you are vulnerable. You are willing to be humble and vulnerable in the moment. You don't know everything. That's the V in vibe. I is insight. Do you know yourself? Are you self-aware? Are you willing to be open to others' preferences and the way they like to show up? How do you use insight to make decisions? B is for belief. What do you believe? Is it clear what you believe? Do people want to follow that belief? Any energy that comes from it, which is the E. Do you show up with your energy? Not necessarily crazy Tony Robbins energy, but whatever your version of energy is. It could be more low key, but vibe is vulnerability, insight, belief, and energy. And if you have a strong vibe in an organization, you can do anything. You can get through any challenge, visionary or not.
Do you feel like I had that aha moment for me, like where I kind of had to get out of my own way as a visionary and I bought into EOS and
yeah.
I'll never forget like talking to the implementer and I'm like, this is going to take 2 years. Like, are you kidding me? And you want me to pay you what? And I'll never forget because I had an operations manager who I loved to death. She was like my first hire in the company and she was just so burnt out on client work and she was dealing with me, which is a visionary arsonist, putting out fires, causing organizational whiplash. She looked me dead in the eye and she's like, if you don't do this, I'm leaving. And I said, no, you're not. I'll do it. I'll sit tight. I'll keep my mouth shut for a year. And I did it. And I came on the other side of EOS.
Yeah.
But without those things happening with me,
yeah,
like it wouldn't have happened. Like, how do you prepare an entrepreneur? I don't know if it's a revenue thing or a mental thing, but like they have to, like your first part of your letter, the V,
yeah,
they have to be humble and vulnerable. Like, yeah. How do you steer an entrepreneur that direction?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm asking that clear, but
no, I think that's a good question, Wes. And you know, frankly, sometimes people are just clearly not that. They're not yeah. vulnerable. They're not humble. I'll share an example if it's okay.
Absolutely.
To illustrate what you just said. I had the pleasure of meeting an entrepreneur at an event recently. Really good guy, lots of energy, sharp as a tack, as they say. And we were getting a drink or something at that little happy hour after the event, you know, and he came up to me and said, hey, I'd like to learn more about what you do. And I explained it little bit, as much as you can, standing at the bar, grabbing a drink. And he said, you know, I'm all about core values. And one of my core values is accountability. Like if my people aren't on time, I just fire them because they need to be accountable. And my first reaction was, you're the last person I want to work with because there's nothing I can do if you're not willing to be vulnerable. There's got to be now, if people are routinely late, that's a different conversation. But that seems a little bit trigger happy. So that was such a stark example of just some people don't have that gene or haven't developed it yet to be vulnerable and humble and willing and open like you were in the example when your operations manager said, if you don't do this, I'm leaving. And what she was saying is, Wes, I trust you and I need you to know we need more structure around here. And you're like, all right, let's do it then. That's a vulnerable leader. You know, if she didn't have the trust in you to push back on you, she would have just said, okay, and probably left. And would you have even known?
Yeah, I was torching the houses. She was the first one to stand up to me, and I owe her a lot to do that. So, like, what do you see then with these entrepreneurs, right, from a starting point to, like, wherever in the engagement? Like, does it change their life? You know, does it make them happier? Does revenue grow? Or, like, what's some of the top things you see change when an entrepreneur is able to, like, change their vibe and be humble and invest there.
The first thing is I think that I hear is I love that there's somebody to talk to about this. I had a client recently say to me, "Hey, I wanted to, do you have a minute?" I said, "Sure." We jumped on a phone call and I said, "Hey, I have this issue I'm trying to deal with. It's kind of a weird situation. And I couldn't think of who to call, but you're the closest thing I have to a therapist. So I'm calling you." And I'm like, "Hey, listen, I am not a licensed therapist. I don't play one on TV. I don't pretend to be able to solve people's psychological challenges, but I'm all ears. What's going on?" And all he was describing to me, Wes, was a human being challenge. He and his COO had a difference of opinion on something that was happening in the business. The COO went one way and he wanted to go another way. And he called me to say, "How do I handle this conversation with him where I don't upset him or make him feel like I don't trust him, but that we don't have this happen again?" So we spoke for 20, 25 minutes and he's like, "You know what? Thank you. That's exactly what I needed. I just needed someone to hear me out, who I trust and who could understand what I was talking about." That's what I see happening for visionaries. I know that I know what I'm doing. I just want somebody I trust to be able to tell me that I'm on the right track and maybe give me a tool or a tip or an idea to go a direction that maybe I hadn't thought of before.
It's funny you mentioned that because I think as an entrepreneur, like it's kind of lonely, right? Like you and I met through EO Entrepreneur Organization, our tribe of people, right? And it's funny you mentioned that because I think like 5 years ago, somebody had asked like, "What do you do for, like, what do you do?"
Yeah.
I'm like, "Well, I think what I actually do is I'm an unlicensed therapist in the state of Michigan."
Yes, the world's least qualified therapist. It's called,
like, I feel like I should send in money for the license, even though I wouldn't get approved to be one, but that's kind of what I do.
That's right.
But, you know, kind of going back to people, since you're so experienced on that, I think it's, you know, as I've kind of evolved as a leader, I'm trying to continuously evolve. But something that stands out to me from all the content I absorb, it's I'm trying to be the dumbest guy in the room, right? I want people that are smarter around me. But like, what are some things that a company can start to do? Like they might not be ready for like a Bill Green or an AdFact Advisors quite yet.
Yeah.
But what are some like baby steps that entrepreneurs can start to do to kind of go down the right path?
I love that question. I mean, the simple things are sometimes the most high impact. One of them is have routine conversations with your people. One of my mentors in the corporate world, whose opinion I respect a ton, even to this day, used to call them walks in the park. They don't have to be formal paper, put it in your company file nonsense. Just a conversation, meet up for lunch, grab a coffee, go for a walk around the parking lot, 15 minutes once a month, and just ask people three simple questions. It's really easy. Number one, what are you working on right now? People love to talk about what they're doing. Number two, what challenges are you facing? How is it going? Number three, how can I help? You can do that without paying anybody a dollar. Connect with your people. Make the time. Schedule it in your calendar. It doesn't have to be rigorous with forms and Likert scales and files and documents. So connecting people is the easiest thing I would say that leaders can do. The second thing I'd say is to include them in decisions. "Hey, we're thinking about rolling out this new product. I wanted to get the team together and see what you thought. Anybody want to weigh in?" Questions are so much better. Make your questions better than your answers. The more you can ask questions of people and have them share, you'd be surprised. You learn things you might not have otherwise heard.
And that goes back into like that, you know, intern or whomever that's like acting as an owner, like they start to feel buy-in and that connection and feel valued.
Yeah.
So what I heard from you is three simple questions, just to reiterate, because I think I love how you just, it's really simple. It's not brain surgery.
No.
What are you working on? What challenges are you currently facing?
Yeah.
And would you even say like personally or business, like business? I mean, because you had mentioned a story earlier, like sometimes it's your personal life that's overflowing into business. And to me, I don't care what anybody says. They're like, "Well, business is business and personal is personal." I'm like, no, like for me, like it's not. It all blends together.
Yep.
And, you know, WYSIWYG, right? Which is what you get. Personal, family, business, they all impact each other.
I agree.
And then number three, you said, how can I help?
Yeah.
And I would imagine consistency is a big thing because the first time as a leader, you probably do that. Your team's like, "Okay, Wes read a book. Let's see how far this goes," right? But then you probably do it again, do it again, and there starts to be some comfortability.
Yeah.
What about like, you know, even like connecting with your team, right? Or like we're in this remote world now where we just hired somebody in our company. She started Monday. She's in Traverse City. She's 5 hours away.
Yeah.
Back in the day, I used to like, we'd go whirly ball playing every quarter or like do something together as a group. How do you Have you seen any cool things to include remote people to kind of keep that vibe?
Yeah, I appreciate that question too. You know, a lost art is a handwritten note. As such a lost art. We're texting people, DMing them, Snapchatting them. My kids will tell me there's probably five or six other things that they do that I don't even know how to use. But jotting a note to someone. I mean, when's the last time you got a personal handwritten note from someone in the mail?
So I write them. So I'm like you. I write them. My handwriting is atrocious.
Even better.
And I love it because it's like, to me, yeah, it's I actually have the same thought process as you is, how many handwritten notes have I received? Like,
yeah,
it, to me, it's just such a differentiator, right? And just, I actually have like company logoed and yeah. I just kind of write my nasty handwriting in there. And perfect. Sometimes I'll send like a Starbucks card or, that's really cool. What I used to do, and I think this is a lost art, and I think talking to you, it just reminded me of what I should do is my employees back in the, I would find out what their favorite alcohol was yeah. and what their favorite candy was. Yeah. And I would write them a handwritten birthday letter. Yeah. It wasn't like BS. It wasn't from like, pay yeah. for the pen to like write your name,
yeah.
which my financial advisor sends me. And I was like, if you send me that again,
yeah,
there's going to be a problem. Like take the 2 seconds to write it or don't do it.
Yeah.
And I would give them like a 6-pack of Bud Light and like Skittles. Like if that was their thing.
Yeah.
I would have a couple times, I would always leave my door open. And people would kind of peek their head and be like, hey, you got a minute. Like that was my thing. You got a minute, right? Yeah. Sit down in the chair and let's see. I had handfuls of people in tears. They were like, ever since I turned X or like I moved away, I don't have anybody. Nobody cares. Like, thank you so much. And I'm like, and what's funny is I love that you say keep it simple because that was my idea.
Yeah.
We had talked operationally and SOPs and all these things about when somebody comes on and birthdays. And I'm like, can we just keep it really simple and make it impactful? Right. But even talking to you, answering my own question is I just need to ship it. I need to ship them something personally, like getting a box personally that you don't know what it is. Like that's probably a nice surprise and delight. And
it's so fun. And there's apps like Thanks, THNKS. I love, you can send someone. I happened to coincidentally, the last two people I use the Thanks app with happen to like hiking. So I send them an REI gift card for $100. And it's easy. It comes on their text. They open up their phone. I'm like, wow. Bill, I was just telling Bill I'm going on a hiking trip and he sent me a gift card to REI and go buy a new backpack. That's a nice connection.
You might need to add 300 to that nowadays, but
right. At least it goes towards a backpack. But I think anyway, even picking up the phone and knowing that someone's daughter had surgery recently. Hey, how did the surgery go? Is everything okay? All people really need to know is that you care about them. That's the most genuinely, like you said a minute ago, it's not some preformed, sentiment that you scribble on every card. It's a genuine from the heart with crappy handwriting. It means it came from you. Yeah. And they know it. That's the important thing. That's the connection I talk.
No, that's awesome. Yeah. So is your services? I mean, I want to talk a little bit, dive deep. I mean, you're a wealth of knowledge. I think you can get a lot of entrepreneurs like right sizing the ship in terms of people. Mm-hmm. Like what's a good company for you? Is it a certain amount of people? Like, what's the trigger for you where you're like, that's a really good opportunity for...
I wish I could answer that directly because it seems like it'd make things so much easier. But I just had a session with a client yesterday that has 9 people. And I'm going in 2 weeks to a company that has 135. So I would say, generally speaking, while there isn't a right answer, most of the organizations I work with are between 25 and 75, maybe skewed more towards 50 to 70. There are exceptions on the tail. But you have to have enough people to where, the connection can get lost. You may have seen that little visual. I think there's a name for it. It starts with a B, Bauer or something or other. I can't remember. I should probably remember this. But it has like a triangle, 3 connection points, and it has a square, 4, and then it gets into hexagon and this big orb. Have you seen that before?
I have not, no.
Okay, the more lines that we have to connect 2 points from 3 to 4 to 8 to 12 to 14, it's just like a bunch of a balled up roll of rubber bands, and the connection gets lost and you get fraction and friction. And that's where we start getting vibe issues is when we can't keep that connection tight. So I would say that for an organization to benefit from working with me, it could be more than 3 or 4 and it could be as many as 1,000, I suppose. But I'd suggest that in my experience, it's been 50 to 150 is a pretty common number, but that doesn't mean it can't be less or more.
I'm assuming you've read a lot of really good books. I don't know why.
Yeah.
What's a good book recommendation you give to an entrepreneur who needs to start paying a little bit more attention to their people and investing in people?
Yeah. Right now, my very favorite kind of like the almost always reaction to that question is a book by Tim Spiker called The Only Leaders Worth Following. And the punchline is he ultimately talks about how important it is to be inwardly sound and others focused to be a truly effective leader. And this is based on some research that he cites in the book. And there's lots of other examples in it that, you know, make it a worthwhile read. That 20,000 Leaders 360 surveys from Fortune 500 leaders back in the late 2010s, I would say 2018, showed that there were 10 common traits among leaders that made them effective according to the 360 feedback. And they were the things you'd expect, right? Ability to strategically think, developing talent, all the things. Yep. Resource allocation, things that good business leaders do. But what was interesting, Wes, was 77% of a leader's effectiveness came down to their ability to be inwardly sound and others focused. Hmm. And what inwardly sound means is self-aware, holistically healthy, you know, confident from within, that vibe that I talk about.
Yeah.
And the others focus was showing empathy and humility and a genuine concern for them. Kind of like going back to the story of the representative I worked with whose dog had died and she wasn't sure well. So if you can be inwardly sound and others focused, Tim Spiker says in the book, you can be an effective leader, but you have to be committed to that. And I think that's just such a great read for leaders, entrepreneurs who are looking to kind of make the people shift effective because it's got to start from inside.
Yeah, no, that's great feedback. Well, it's been really awesome spending time with you.
Yeah.
How can people get in contact with you, Bill? Your wealth of knowledge. I'd love for people to easily connect with you.
I appreciate it. Yeah, my website is meetbillgreen.com. With a name like Bill Green, I don't have a whole lot of options for websites. So meetbillgreen.com is a chance to check out what I do and I'll book an appointment or reach me. My email is bg@meetbillgreen.com. And my cell phone number, I'm happy to get phone calls and texts, is 248-981-2299. And of course, I'm on LinkedIn as Bill Green.
Bill Green's easy. I don't even need to spell it.
That's right. No E at the end. Two in the middle.
Well, Bill, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it. Keep doing what you do.
I appreciate you having me. Thanks.
Have a good one.
You too.
This has been another episode of Entrepreneur Intel. Thank you for joining us. For show notes or other episodes, please visit us at entrepreneurintel.com. Until next time.